Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with young adult author Megan Shawless. After a year of traveling the country in a 100-square-foot camper with her husband, daughter, and dog, Megan Shawless returned home and wrote her first novel. Megan has a BA in journalism from Arizona State University and is a member of the ACFW. As a special education teacher, she helped young people fall in love with reading and writing. Today, she uses words in playful and creative ways at her branding agency. She lives in Abilene, Texas, where you'll find her staying up way too late, reading or hiking with her family. Her debut novel, Protector, is a YA dystopian retelling of Esther, out with White Crown Publishing in April 2024. Megan Shawless, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Cedar.
I am excited to have you. I have not yet read Protector, but I've heard excellent things about it from a mutual friend of ours, Katie Briggs, and she just went on and on about what a great book this was.
Oh, she's so sweet.
Yes, I just started it. I'm so excited because an Esther retelling in a dystopian setting, yes, please. I'm so in for that. It sounds fantastic. Could you share with our listeners a little bit more about your book?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is, like you said, it's a retelling of the Bible's account of Esther, which is an Old Testament account. It's a true historical account. And it's a really interesting book in the Bible because despite being a part of scripture, it never mentioned God at all. And that just leads to all kinds of wonderful questions and opportunities to wonder and think about the story in a really unique way. And so taking the building blocks, the main key pieces of the true account of Esther, I completely reinvented a world, real world. It's not a magical story. It's not a fantasy, but it's set in a near future dystopian world that's a little bit broken and a little bit off. And that's very driven by solar technology and nanotechnology and a little pinch of genetic engineering, and decided to reimagine the building blocks of Esther in that sort of society.
Wow, that is fantastic. I love near future worlds with really cool tech. I think that's so much fun. It's something I love to explore in my own stories. So I'm excited about it. And the story of Esther is such a fascinating one. It's one I've always loved growing up in the church as a little kid. Mm-hmm. You know, even it's like, oh, this really fascinating book that talks about this girl who does some pretty courageous things in a society that is very against her. And then yet God isn't mentioned, like you said, at all. So it does bring up all these really fascinating questions. And I love, like I said earlier, that you took that and threw it in a dystopian world, because how cool. That's such a fun twist. How did you come up with the idea for this story? Like, where did it originally come from?
Yeah, I keep a list of random story ideas that strike me at very inopportune moments, like while scrubbing a shower or taking care of my kids. And I have it on my phone and I just jot story ideas down whenever they pop into my head, no matter how weird they are, I do that. And if we roll back a little bit, so like many authors, Protector is my debut novel. It's the first one that's being published, but it's not the first book I ever wrote, which is a very, very common story. So I was playing with this other book that was very much filling up my life, and it came to her. It was the right time to set that aside and to pursue a new story. And God was very clear with me that, like, now's the time. You need to start writing again. Write something new. And I said, awesome, what do I write? And he did not fill in the blank on that answer at all. So I went to my handy dandy list of story ideas. And one of the story ideas, and I have no idea when I wrote it down, said Esther Ninja Warrior. And basically something along the lines of, like, what if the competition sort of old world beauty pageant to be queen, what if it was a physical competition to become the king's bodyguard? And that's all I had in my phone. Esther Ninja Warrior, what if it was a physical competition, the king's bodyguard? And I said, that's a story I want to write. And everything came from there.
That is so fascinating. I love how story ideas come together in random places. I've definitely gotten some of my best ideas at times where it was like really difficult to figure out how to write it down. You know, like I was a referee for a while and I would be in the middle of a lacrosse game
And then this story idea would come to me, and you really can't like be like, everyone stop playing. I'm going to go write this down. But those are sometimes, I think, the best seeds of ideas. And for all of the craziest and maybe not great ideas I've had, I think some of the best have come just from jotting them down and looking at them again later. And that idea of, oh, what if she was the bodyguard? What a fun, different take on it. But yet you can still have that competition, and probably in an even more epic way, right? Because now they're fighting each other instead of parading around in a beauty pageant kind of way.
Yeah, which is interesting. I'm not a particular sporty athletic person. I did live in Olympic City, USA, which is Colorado Springs, for 10 years. It's the home of the US Olympic Committee, and you do genuinely run into Olympians at the grocery store and that kind of thing. So maybe that was part of what inspired it. I can't even truly say. But I watched a ton of videos of Army Rangers competing in obstacle courses, and clips from American Ninja Warrior, and really just tried to explore what is reasonable for a very athletic but normal human to accomplish. And it's a lot more than I would have thought.
It really is fascinating. I had to do a similar type of research for my books because I had a big military element in my series. And so it was like, okay, what can I do with these? For me, it's teens, you know, and I think yours are teens and young adults too. So it's like, okay, what can you actually do? And it is fascinating to like research that and look into it and see how people can push their bodies to these, past these limits, really, that I would think there would be. And they can do incredible, incredible things. And then you add nanotech and different little elements like that into your book as well, right?
I do. So the main character, she's called both Novalise and Astra, just like Esther of the Bible. We all call Esther Esther, but that's not her real name. That's not the name her parents gave her. Her name is Hadassah, which is a really beautiful Hebrew name. And she took on the name Esther because it sounded more fitting in her Babylonian Persian world. So during the season where she was basically hiding her identity, while she was part of this bridal competition, she went by Esther. And then that's what we've all call her. That's what the book of the Bible is named after. It's not the book of Hadassah. So likewise, my character has a name change. So if I say Novalise or if I say Astra, they are the same person.
Okay.
So Novalise is a perfectly normal person, just like you and me. She is very athletic and tall, very tall, but she is in every way a typical human, but that her competitors are not. Her competitors have had injections of nanotechnology that allow them to enhance certain natural abilities. So if they were already fast, now they're inhumanly fast. If they're already limber and agile, now they can walk on a telephone wire, that kind of thing. So she's in a situation where she's the only one who has a standard body, and she can't let anyone know that.
Okay.
And so that naturally puts her at a perceived disadvantage, where she's constantly trying to be something she's not. And she's trying to be the best version of something that she isn't really at all. So that puts a really fun spin on it. It was very fun to write, just in terms of, like I said, what the human body can do, which is epic and amazing. These were bodies God created.
Right.
And then let's go even farther than what a human body actually should be able to do, to a point where maybe it's a little disturbing.
Right. So I always like to ask what books or movies are similar to yours, but I feel like just listening to you talk, Enhanced by Candace Cade sounds like a good comp title. And I think you had mentioned that the Selection is also a good like series comp, but do you have other books, or, I mean, even talking, elaborating on those ones, but I feel like those are some that definitely seem like they fit your book and your world.
Yes. Enhanced by Candace, I have not read yet. It came out right when I was, it came out like a month after I got my publishing contract. And I wanted to be very careful while I was still writing book two to not read anything too similar. I have been, but the Selection definitely is similar in that you have the competition between young women. In the Selection, it is a more traditional, like the competition for to be the bride, to be the queen, but a very similar level of dystopian world, I'd say, in that. I pitched this to my publisher as The Selection meets American Ninja Warrior.
Oh, what a fun twist.
The series Matched by Ali Condi is one of my favorite clean dystopian series. It's a trilogy. And that one also has a similar level of the dystopian vibes, where it's interesting and it's fascinating, but we're not getting into anything so dark that you don't really even want to imagine it or think about it. The first Divergent, the book Divergent specifically, again, kind of has a similar very, and that book was also very physical. There's a lot of a young woman who's really having to push herself to do physical things that she didn't think she would be able to, that she's never trained her body to do. Mm. And then all of the mental anguish that goes with pushing your body like that. So there's some fun comparisons there, maybe.
Definitely. And all of those, I think it's been a long time since I've read the Matched ones, but I'm pretty sure I read them years ago, but those are all fun dystopian books. Excellent.
All three of those, I wrote those in about the same 6 months. When I read Matched, I thought I had found the newest, coolest book. And then I looked it up and it was 10 years old. I had no idea. I had just stumbled upon the wonderful world of these YA dystopian adventures and all that goes with that.
Sure.
And, sure enough, it was not remotely new, and it was very inspiring in that way.
Very neat. So is Novalise your favorite character, or do you have another character that you actually secretly or openly enjoy talking about or spending time with, so to speak, more?
Sure. Novalise is amazing, unquestionably. There's, you know, other points of view in the book, but it is her. She's the Esther. It's her story. However, Novalise has a brother. She has a half brother who is 7 years older than her and who ended up kind of having to raise her when he was just a teenager himself. Mm. And his name is Declan, and she calls him Dex. And I love Dex so much. He is the most ornery, stubborn, but wildly brilliant man. And I just absolutely adore every scene that Dex is in. So I think he's too fun.
Is he kind of like your Mordecai character?
Yes.
Then? Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Instead of going with an uncle, which is what I was to Esther, in actuality, I wanted something maybe a little bit closer in age and something a little bit tighter of a bond, perhaps. And so instead, yes, Declan is my Mordecai, exactly, who becomes her guardian and tells her what to do. And unlike the true biblical Esther, who obeyed every time that Mordecai says, tells her to do something, she does.
Yeah.
She's very respectful in the Bible. My Esther is not. Mine is not. They have a brother-sister relationship that I don't have a brother, but that I imagine it reads a bit more similar to what someone might experience today with an older sibling.
Very cool. I love those sibling types of relationship in stories too. They add a fun element because even when it's a significantly older sibling, it's still a sibling. So it's not like a parent or a respected elder. There's maybe respect for that older sibling, but there's a limit to it too. And there's an annoyance that hits at a certain level. So it's kind of fun to watch that dynamic play out on page.
It is. And Declan has been raising, like I said, his younger sister, his half sister, since he was only 17, 18 himself. And I imagine with that, he would have come into a mindset of a parent of a, you know, because I said so kind of mindset. Mm-hmm. Well, now his baby sister is 18 and that's not going to work anymore.
Yes.
And they have a lot of headbutting over that, all with an undercurrent of deep love. So
that's great. Love it. So I love talking about themes in this podcast, so I would love to kind of discuss a little bit more about the deeper themes in your story, and if you could just share one of the themes or even a few that you've discovered or even plan to put in the book, I'd love to hear it.
Absolutely. One major theme in this book is that a relationship with God is the greatest advantage that you will ever have or ever need. The character, Novalise, when she's in a situation where she has to become this other person in this competition, she has to hide the fact that she has a relationship with a higher power. And she and Alpha is what he's called. And they have conversations in her head all the time. And she has to decide to what extent she can let that show. In this world, she's constantly trying to find the advantage over these technologically advanced young women. And so she's constantly trying to play their game. Mm-hmm. She's trying to be the best upgraded body, and she doesn't even have one of those. And so there's kind of a theme here. There's a strong theme there of kind of stop trying to be the best in the world when you aren't even of this world. Mm. You're not meant to be a part of this. You're in it, but you're not of it. And so throughout the book, she is struggling to find an advantage, to find a leg up, and at some point has to realize or make a decision about whether or not her relationship with a figure who in many ways represents the Lord, is that enough Is that enough of an advantage, even in the face of odds very much stacked against her? Mm. So that's definitely a theme. It's a theme I wanted to play with. I wouldn't say it was entirely just deferred, but it was something I wanted to play with throughout the book. But it did end up manifesting in some ways that surprised me and delighted me as I wrote it.
Yes, which is the best when it happens that way, right? Mm-hmm. I think those are the themes that are so fun when you start down a trail and then you think it's going to go one way and God's like, actually, we're going to like turn this a little more this way. And it's fun to discover those deeper themes with him. But mm-hmm. I love that you took that and played with it. I think it makes sense for an Esther retelling as well, because, you know, mm-hmm. Esther had her Jewish faith, right, in the book of Esther, and that's what was being persecuted, what Haman was coming for, you know. And so it's definitely her needing to decide, even though God isn't mentioned, like, am I willing mm-hmm. to trust and obey and do the next thing I'm supposed to do, even when it seems like by doing so, I'm going to be disadvantaging myself by aligning myself with this people or with God. And it feels like, oh, I could be disadvantaging myself. And that's never the case. And yet mm-hmm. it feels like the case so often in different times in our lives where it's like, well, if I do what God calls me to, or if I honor God here, or if I align myself with biblical standards in a culture that is increasingly against certain biblical standards, it can feel like, well, that's a huge disadvantage and I'm going to lose. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the lies like the enemy loves to play with in our hearts and in our minds, because if he can get us to believe that we're at a disadvantage because we have God, then we're never going to experience all God has for us. But if we can be like, oh no, the greatest advantage I have is that I get to walk in this life with a God who knows me and loves me and has forgiven me and accepted me, then we have a greater advantage than anyone who doesn't have that. But it's a really powerful theme.
Absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. You articulated that so very well, and you haven't even read it, which makes me so happy. Yeah, it is so resonant, and exactly, especially right now, exactly what you said. There are so many times where that lie tries to get in that we should downplay, or we should close our mouths, or we should back off. And of course, there's discernment and wisdom and judgment to be had. But there's so many times where silence isn't the answer, or downplaying our faith is not the answer. And that's one of the delightful and really interesting things about the biblical account of Esther is she lied. She hid who she was. And I mean, one could debate all day long about whether that was the right thing to do to survive, or if it wasn't. Mm. How different would it have been if from day one she had said, look, this is who I am, take it or leave it. And we don't know. Yeah. And we don't know. We do know that she did step up in the perfect moment, and she did accomplish amazing things that she couldn't have if she continued to hide. Mm. So that is just, it's a delightful thing to look at and to explore and to apply to our lives as well.
Definitely. And it also is an encouragement. And I love that the Bible doesn't ever hide what a person actually does. It's one of the ways you can know this is an actual true recounting of things, because there are people in the Bible who do not look bright and rosy and beautiful, even though God used them. Like they made some really poor decisions. But I think one of the neat things even about Esther is she did make that transition at some point. So even, you know, because it can be discouraging, even if you're a listener and hearing this and thinking, oh, but I've blown it. I've messed up. There's been times where mm-hmm. I totally denied that I was a Christian, or I didn't want to acknowledge that I was following God. And you can easily get feeling really bad about that and never really recover, you know? But when we see Esther, like, yeah, she lied at first. She made this one decision. And like you said, I'm sure there are many people much smarter than me who have debated that topic ad nauseum. But at the end of the day, she made a different decision at the end. And that different decision mm-hmm. was a turning point in Jewish history that they still celebrate today. Like they still have the Feast of Purim. Like that still happens. And it's because this woman said, for such a time as this, I'm going to listen to this person in my life who's speaking truth, and I'm going to step up and own who I am. And we can still do that. So even when we look back in things, and I have those times in my life where I look back and I wish I had done something different, or I wish I'd stood up and been strong in that moment and I wasn't, but we can grow from that, and we can make a different choice the next time. And I think Absolutely. That's one of the beautiful things about the story of Esther. And it sounds like that's a story in your story as well, where this is like something she's wrestling with and has to make decisions on. And I'm sure there are times she fails because, you know, it's a book. So there has to be failure, yes. Right?
Yes, she fails a delightful number of times. But I hope it's relatable for people. She questions at some point whether this voice in her head is really who she has always thought it was. I think that question of, is this really God or is this just me wanting something to be a certain way is definitely a question that a lot of us wrestle with when we have a thought in our mind that kind of pops up out of nowhere, especially to do something that feels a little crazy, a little out of the box, out of our comfort zone. It's a skill, it's a practice to discern that. And that's something that she has to go through as well, especially if you're going to go do something that could have a lot of risks or in the natural attached to it.
Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm even more excited to read the book, honestly, as we're talking. Good. I'm like getting more and more excited. And I love hearing about these deeper themes. And I love talking to the authors about it because it's like, okay, there's clearly you're passionate about this and your heart's in it. And I know you said that this was something you wanted to add into the story. Was there a reason in particular that you were like, really feeling this theme in particular was something you wanted to talk about or think on, or was it just one that you wanted to personally wrestle through and play within a story?
I think it just is something that to me is inherent in the Esther story. And that if I wanted to do justice to, like I said, you know, the building blocks, you know, whenever you're retelling any, you know, even a fairy tale retelling, you want to hit certain building blocks, but you need to do your own thing. When you're retelling the Bible, which is perfect, it's a different mindset of playing with that whole concept of I'm going to literally take something perfect and do something not perfect with it. And is that okay? And is God okay with that? Which is another very interesting topic. Yeah. But to me, that just felt like so much a part of the story. I have no idea, obviously, what ran through Esther's mind at any point, but if I had been in her shoes, then I would have had so many of the thoughts that you articulated. This thing about me that it's either the greatest thing about me or the worst. And different people are telling me something different. Either the single advantage I need, the only thing I need to survive is this relationship, or it's what is going to kill me, or both. Right. Somehow. The theme of advantage and whether or not God is enough in stacked natural odds, it felt very timely in our world and in my life, but it also felt like a key piece of an Esther telling.
Yes, for sure. Well, as we kind of like move to the last leg of our interview here, I would love if you could give us a glimpse into you as an author and share a little bit about what started you on your writing journey.
Absolutely. I did all of the wordy, bookish things as a child. I spoke very early. I won little essay competitions. I was on speech team, all of these things that very much pointed toward writing and being a writer. But somewhere along the line, I kind of set fiction aside. And I got my education in journalism, but my goal was never actually to be a journalist. My goal was to be able to communicate well with absolutely anyone. That was always the goal, whether it was a scientist or a politician or a child. I just wanted to be able to communicate well with people. And so that was why I pursued that. And career-wise, I was a special education teacher for a number of years, which was fabulous. And then I work full-time with my husband now at our branding agency. And so words and reading and writing have always been a key part of my story, but it didn't look like authoring fiction until 2020. And in 2020, a couple of key things happened. I read some absolutely amazing books that we've already talked about. Like I said, within less than 6 months, I read The Selection, Matched, and all of the Divergent books and several others. I don't even remember how I got on this kick, but I read one of them. And then I found some list that was like, if you like Divergent, go read these. And I read all of the others and something in me clicked. I'd always thought, like 99% of Americans, I could write a book someday. But when I read those stories, something said, this is my voice. I love historical romances. I love contemporary romances. I love the adults and I love to consume them, but nothing, when I read them, I don't think, yes, I should go do this. And when I read these amazing young adult stories that grapple with identity, with that transition that we all do at some age, whether we're teenagers or not, from you know, the Bible calls it tutors and governors, being under our parents, being under rules, to having to make our own choices and become accountable for those choices. For me, that is the absolute hallmark of YA, is moving from that more structured system into it's me making these calls, and I'm not perfect, and I'm going to mess up, and I'm going to have to get on my own two feet and figure it out. That transition, it just blew me away, and everything in me said, yes, this is what I could actually write. But then I had to think of something to write, and I had zero, there was no list in 2020. There was no list on my phone. In the backyard playing with my daughter, who was two or three at the time, and a what if question popped into my head. And I think so many great stories start with a what if, you know, whether it's, you know, what if you walked through a wardrobe and found another world, or, you know, what if there was a piece of jewelry that controlled all of a fantasy Middle Earth, you know, whatever it is, there's great what ifs behind stories. And a what if question popped into my head that isn't related to this book, so I won't go into what it was, but, and within 20, 30 minutes, that what if question went from, oh, that's fascinating, to here's how it would all look. And 7 weeks later, I wrote the end on my first manuscript.
Wow.
Granted, a way too short, horribly like underdeveloped, but a version of it 7 weeks later. And this is all happening during 2020. So our work had fallen off. There was all of a sudden all this time. You couldn't go anywhere. And I poured all that time into writing. And more importantly, the Lord, during this time of chaos, was just filling my brain with the most beautiful images, the most beautiful pictures. And so God and I did that together for a couple of months. And in the process, I discovered this is the most fun I've had doing anything ever.
Yes.
And I want to do this again and again and again and again. I don't want this to be my quarantine project, right? I've always been a writer. That was never a question.
Right.
This type of writing lights me up like no other type of writing. And that book is still on a shelf, so to speak. You know, it's still on my computer, and it may never see the light of publishing day. And that's fine, because it was an entry point into what I am absolutely called to do with the next phase of my life, which is write books that show that God is good.
I love that. And I love how God brings us to these unexpected turns in our life, because it sounds like that was not something you were ready, like planning, you know, it came out of the blue. And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd always hoped maybe someday I'd write a book. I knew absolutely nothing about what that looked like at all. But no, it certainly was not on my like New Year's resolutions. Like, this is the year I'm going to write a book. Not at all. It just happened. And then I went back and learned everything I needed to learn at that time about how to actually do it. But I knew I had to get it out first before I intimidated myself in the world of writing professional development.
Yes, that paralysis of analysis that can happen so fast.
Yes, exactly. So I spit the book out in many ways, and then went and looked at, well, how long is a young adult book supposed to work? How is it pacing supposed to work? And all of those things that are very, very teachable.
Sure.
Those things can be learned once you let God pour the story part out.
Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. So now when you're not writing all of your fun stories and imagining other worlds, what do you do with your time?
What do I do with my time? I do a lot of wonderful things that are all based pretty much around my home. I, in some ways, have a somewhat unique life, I guess. I work from home. I have for years, and I co-own a branding agency where I do lots of writing in that world that looks entirely different than dystopian fiction. I homeschool. I have a daughter who's kindergarten age, and I have a brand new baby. So right now my world is very much full of snuggles and baby kisses. Aww. And all of those wonderful things. And that's been delightful too, because my world is very home-based in that way, that my daughter gets to be part of that. And both mom and dad are home all the time, that kind of thing. I'm also a worship leader at my church. Both my husband and I are a part of that together, which is just a wonderful thing to be able to pour into a very different side of creativity. But music has always been a part of my life since I was, oh goodness, speaking, yes. Forming words. So that's a big part of it. And the outdoors as much as possible. It hasn't, in the season I'm in with young kiddos and whatnot, it's not as frequent as it used to be, but there's nothing that will refresh me more than tall pine trees or an ocean or just kind of breathing the fresh air and getting away from any kind of sign of civilization.
Oh, neat. I love that you get to have that time with your family like that at home and everything. And that's really sweet that you're all able to enjoy newborn baby boy together. So
yes,
That's great. Oh, wonderful. Well, we are running out of time for today, but before we wrap up, could you just let listeners know where they can connect with you and find your book online?
Absolutely. The best way to connect with me is through my website, which is meganshawless.com. Through there, you can find links of where to buy the book. You can also order signed copies, signed paperback copies directly through my website, and that I send with fun little gifts as well. My newsletter is actually my absolute favorite way to connect with people. I send a newsletter twice a month with a little word of encouragement in the Lord and some favorite things I'm reading and whatnot like that. And it is actually far beyond any other channel. My favorite way to connect with readers is through email and through that newsletter. But I'm also on social media, on Instagram, and all of those links and stuff are on my website.
Wonderful. And I will have a link to your website in the show notes as well, so listeners can easily jump over there. But Megan Shawless, thank you so much for being on Read Clean YA with CJ. It was a pleasure getting to know you today.
Thank you so much, CJ. It was a delight.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Megan Shawless. It was so fun getting to talk to Megan and hear her heart behind her story. And I always love a great dystopian adventure. If you're looking for a story that combines nanotechnology and royal romance with a heartfelt quest to make a difference, then you'll love this dystopian reimagining of the Book of Esther. There are some elements that might be too much for young or sensitive readers. Older teens and 20-somethings are put in a situation where they think they have to compromise themselves to survive. It's clear to the reader that this is a lie or test, but characters consider what they'll do in that situation. There's also more romance in this story than some of the other books we talk about on this podcast, and the girls in the book experience some scary moments with things that happen to their families. So those are just some things to be made aware of if you have a younger or sensitive reader. Next time on Read Clean YA with CJ, I'll be talking with Nadine Brandis about her newest novel, The Nightmare Virus. This is Nadine's second time on the podcast, and we had a truly wonderful conversation. This book is one not to be missed, so be sure to tune in so you can hear all about it. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean young adult books too.